KALW.
I learned that, like, people aren't as involved as I thought they are, like, especially in my community.
While we're still glued to our screens waiting for a final verdict on the presidential race, we're also catching up on our local elections.
Since we're in the Bay Area, I thought, like, you know, like, we're so progressive or whatever, it's important to share what we know with everyone, because you are going to come across people who had never heard of specific measures or propositions.
We'll hear how people in the Bay Area are feeling about the results, including Spanish-speaking communities. We talk to El Tecolote's editor-in-chief to hear about the Bay Area Latino vote.
So it's always been a little frustrating for me to see, all of us lumped together into this one voting block.
And we'll take a little break from the elections with a reading from a local poet. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. With the nation uncertain about its future, we can be sure about one thing. KALW News Director Ben Trefney and our team of journalists have been up long hours reporting on and analyzing election results from all over the Bay Area. And Ben joins me now. Hey, Ben.
It's a new day, Hannah.
I guess it is. But how much sleep did you get last night?
I got about 3 hours of sleep last night.
3 hours.
Yeah, but interesting. Obviously, I went to sleep about 1 a.m. and it felt like 2016 again, I got to say. But I woke up at 4 and I went to the computer and I saw the momentum had moved to the Biden camp.
That's right. And we still don't know.
Yeah, I think even if one side wins, we're not going to really know until the last lawsuit is settled.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ben, let's focus in on the Bay Area. Big picture, what did we learn last night?
Well, most people around here, no surprise, want Biden to win. 86% of San Franciscans want it. 82% of folks in Alameda County. In fact, nearly two-thirds of people all across California voted for the Democratic candidate.
Right, and that's not a surprise. More than two-thirds of the state legislature is Democratic.
And so is every person who holds office who was elected by the entire state, from Governor Newsom on down. I actually was curious exactly how much of a supermajority the Dems have after last night. So I tallied it up at the Secretary of State's website, where I've been spending a lot of time lately. So there are two houses, the State Senate and the Assembly. I'm going to start with the Assembly, and I'm going to run some numbers by you, so get ready.
Ready.
All 80 seats of the State Assembly were being contested in this election, Hannah, and it looks like it'll stay roughly the same. That's about 60 Democrats and 20 Republicans, max. Now, most of these races last night, they weren't even close. Only two are toss-ups, and a lot of the races are Democrats running against Democrats, like Mark Levin, who beat Veronica Jacoby up in San Rafael. So about three-quarters of the state assembly is Democratic, and that's probably not going to change anytime soon. Definitely not this election.
Okay. And so what about the Senate?
Well, for the Senate, there are 40 state senators, and it was only about two-thirds Democratic going into last night. Half of those seats were on the ballot. Now, in the very best-case scenario for Republicans, with the ballot still being counted, they'll hold steady. But four of the races that were being contested are really close. They're all down in Southern California. So if those swing over, Hannah, you could be down to just seven Republicans out of 40 Senate seats in California.
So Democrats approaching a super-duper majority.
Yeah, super-duper majority. That does look likely.
That's got to make a Democratic governor like Gavin Newsom's job a lot easier, right?
Maybe. But we've seen some pushback against some of his free spending during the pandemic. Now, this is a politician we've been watching since he was a supervisor in San Francisco. And even then, it really seemed to me like he had presidential aspirations.
So if Trump is reelected, maybe we'll see Governor Newsom running in 2024.
Yeah, seriously, that seems pretty likely if Trump gets elected. And if Newsom were to get that job as president, we'll see how he can handle that super-duper partisanship of national politics. But yeah, like I said, we're going to see what happens in this election first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the people running for office around the Bay.
Sure. Well, unsurprisingly, Hannah, incumbents held their positions. Mm-hmm. There are some familiar names, Nancy Pelosi, Jackie Speier, Barbara Lee. And more locally in San Francisco, David Chu, Phil Ting, Scott Wiener, they all kept their state offices, and I think that they were expected to. Our colleague, Rose Aguilar, she gave a live newscast this morning, and here's what she had to say about some of the rest of what happened in San Francisco.
The big news of the night is that big money did not win. Tim Redman reported that $5 million came in from big tech, big real estate, and backers of the GOP. We were just inundated with those mailers.
Oh, yeah.
And Tim reports that progressives will maintain their majority on the board of supervisors, although possibly not the same 8-vote majority they had.
That's KALW's Rose Aguilar speaking with Kevin Vance this morning. Also, incumbents won the day in the City College and San Francisco schools elections, and the other positions besides incumbents are too close to call as yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, since July, we've been telling the story of the propositions. We made more than 40 election briefs. Let's hear about some of those. What happened?
Yeah, sure. Well, let me tell you what's passed, Hana. People who are on parole are going to be able to vote in California elections.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be stricter limits on what data can be shared with internet companies.
Right. And then there's that $200 million question, Ben, Prop 22.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that allowed gig workers to stay independent contractors.
Instead of needing to be employees.
Mm-hmm. And we all saw that Uber and Lyft and DoorDash, they each spent about $50 million to pass Prop 22.
And they did it by quite a lot of votes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what KALW's Teresa Katsourilis said about it last night during our live coverage of the Bay Votes 2020.
Earlier this year, California passed a law that defined who's considered an independent contractor and who's considered an employee.
Right.
Under that new law, gig companies have to extend benefits to employees like drivers. Prop 22 overrides that law and basically says that they don't have to. So if Prop 22 passes, the benefits that these drivers and other gig workers will get will be quite limited.
That's KALW's Teresa Katsourilis on Prop 22, which California voters have approved. San Francisco always has a few props up for consideration, Ben.
Yeah, a few, like 12 this year.
A few. What were some of the highlights?
Well, as things stand right now, San Francisco passed them all. We're talking about school bonds, pathways to affordable housing, police reform.
And that proved to be popular with voters all over the Bay Area. Voters passed police reform measures in Berkeley, in Oakland, Sonoma, San Jose.
That's right. But the one in San Francisco that really catches my attention is Measure L.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that taxes companies whose top executives make more than 100 times the median compensation paid to their San Francisco employees.
Mm-hmm.
It was dubbed the overpaid executive tax.
Mm-hmm.
And nearly twice as many people voted yes on that than no. I've been on a group text with friends around the country all about the election, and that's the one that sparked a lot of conversation.
And probably will spark some lawsuits, too.
Yeah, considering who's involved with it, I'm sure. And one other measure in San Francisco, Hana, Prop G would allow residents as young as 16 years old the right to vote in municipal elections. It's close, but it's passing right now. So we've been working a lot with teenagers for our podcast, TBH. These are some really politically engaged young people. And last night, we spoke with Lisbeth Ibarra. She's a 16-year-old from the Rise Youth Center in the city of Richmond. She phone banked about 2,000 people to try to get out the vote in the lead up to the election.
I learned that people aren't as involved as I thought they are, especially in my community. I thought that living in the Bay, since we're in the Bay Area, I thought we're so progressive or whatever, it's important to share this information and share what we know with everyone, because you are going to come across people who really value this information, people who had never heard of, specific measures or propositions.
That's 16-year-old Lisbeth Ibarra from the city of Richmond.
Okay, well, thanks, Ben, for sharing those voices and thoughts on the election.
Thank you, Hana.
That's Ben Trefney, KALW's news director. You can find all our election coverage at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And we're going to continue our post-election day coverage and check in with one of our election media partners, El Tecolote, the Bay Area's longest-running bilingual newspaper. It covers areas with Spanish-speaking voters like East Palo Alto. And looking at last night's results, there have been some wins and some losses for local organizers in those communities, plus lots of conversation about the Latino vote. To break it down, I talked to El Tecolote's editor-in-chief, Alexis Terrazas, earlier today. Big question, the biggest question today. How are you? How are you doing?
Better than yesterday, I guess. You know, I was a nervous wreck, like I think a lot of us. You know, we're journalists, but I'm also a parent, a community member. So just trying to stay patient, you know, and deliver the best kind of clear news to our communities that have been relying on us for that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, we've all been following media, social media all night this morning. What are you seeing or reading, hearing from people in the communities you're covering and that you follow?
We're a Latino newspaper, but we don't limit our scope just to Latino issues, right? So, I mean, there were many ballot propositions this year that were going to impact like a lot of like working class folks, right? Like Prop 22, for example, was the most expensive proposition in California state history. You know, we put out our voter guide and did a few pieces on it as well. But to see that it did, you know, pass, it was certainly, it felt like we've been hearing, it was a blow to a lot of like labor organizers and working class communities, right?
And that was the proposition about app-based
drivers.
Mm-hmm. They're staying independent contractors.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, but there were also, you know, some real, you know, we have to count our victories too, right? So we look at also the proposition that gave the right to parolees to vote. You know, so we count that, and as well as like Measure C, you know, in San Francisco. So I guess our motto at THECO is to like, okay, we have to document our defeats, but also count our victories, you know?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the progressive props on the state level that benefit kind of lower income communities and people of color failed, like Prop 16 would have overturned the affirmative action ban, and Prop 21 would have expanded rent control. But then, at the local level, you mentioned earlier counting the wins, a lot of progressive props did pass, right? Yes, on police oversight. Yes, on affordable housing, services for the homeless. So what does that say to you that at a state level, a lot of the progressive props failed, but at a local level, they passed? A lot of them have passed.
I think we all kind of knew that these were propositions that we were hopeful about, you know, but wouldn't be entirely surprised if they didn't pass. You know, so what I've been really kind of, and I was reflecting on this last night as I was looking in the numbers and kind of feeling dejected too, as a dad, as a renter, you know, was that I've in the last 4 years, I've really seen, you know, grassroots efforts and community really come together and step up. So my hope is that despite the outcomes, right, and that's at the national level and the rural, regional, local level that we have here, we have to continue to, you know, try to make as much change locally. So it's not necessarily surprising, you know, but I do feel that we are taking steps forward in the positive direction, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. You know, a big kind of thing that people were talking about since yesterday on the national level was the quote Latino vote.
Oh my God.
And Latino voters. And we heard a lot of conversation. I've been on Twitter since this morning, and so many people are talking about, you know, just talk to us. We're not a monolith. We know we're not a monolith.
I'm delighted you brought this up.
All of you people surprised that, you know, a group, you know, a part of the quote Latino vote went for Trump, you know.
Yeah.
For Trump, all this whole conversation, El Tecolote put out a Latino voter guide. It's like you're in the middle of this conversation. Of course, Latinos are not a monolith.
No, not at all.
What are your thoughts on this whole conversation?
I love this question, Hannah. I really do, because it really hits home for me, right? Like, we put out our Latino voter guide, right? And we've been building ourselves as a Latino newspaper since 1970. And our Latino voter guide is definitely from the San Francisco Latino perspective, right? And if you go to Texas and New Mexico and obviously in Florida, right? And I think this is where context really, really plays an important role, because to those who aren't from our communities, who might just kind of lump us all in together, they wouldn't have the context of, okay, maybe the Venezuelan and Cuban and some Nicaraguan folks who have fled, who were, driven from their homelands after dictators, you know, fell, they'll vote a certain way. And they'll usually align themselves with, right-wing politics. So it's always been a little frustrating for me to see, all of us lumped together into this one voting block, right? Because in this country, in the context of the United States, you do have, and I don't know if we want to take this in a talk about race, but Latinos aren't one race, as you know, right? We have a fair share of white Latinos, indigenous Latinos, Afro Latinos. So it's just been really fascinating to see, it's frustrating and fascinating to see how some of this stuff plays out.
It's really interesting. I get that too, because I come from a community, I come from Arabic speaking communities, I come from Muslim communities, I come from African communities. All of those groups have heavy Trump support, and people don't get it. So a lot of people are talking about, why don't you try to understand the nuances, right?
I definitely have a lot of feelings about that. And, we saw with these uprisings, like, newsrooms having a reckoning, right? When black men and women continue to get killed by police, whether on the street or in their own homes, it seemed like there was this reckoning happening in newsrooms, right, where they were addressing the lack of voices and diversity. And of course, when you have that, and Hannah, I'm sure you've been in mainstream newsrooms, I've been there too, and there is, a lot of the time, the leadership looks a certain way, and the narrative kind of prevails, right? So to your point, the fact that a lot of these major news outlets don't have that historical context leads to a lot of folks being surprised. And those of us, who are in these communities, are not, So,
no.
I mean, you and I are journalists, so we see.
We're journalists and we're people of color. I mean, everybody I'm talking to from kind of communities of color that I know are not surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
right.
It's not a huge surprise to a lot of people.
No.
Which other people find surprising in and of itself that we're not surprised. And so if we come back to the local then, and El Tecolote, your Latino voter guide, reaching out to communities here. Looking forward, what is your newsroom going to be focused on, given what we do know and what we're still waiting for the results on? Today, tomorrow, what are you guys working on?
I mean, honestly, we're just trying to, at this point, trying to gather as much accurate information as we speak. We have a recap of our major props that we're trying to go live with on our site, and we're actually in production today, so our newspaper is going to drop tomorrow. So immediately, that's what we're focusing on. But I guess with the greater spirit of it, what we really want to do, and our whole news staff has had this mentality that despite, who wins or what props are passed, we want to be able to hold, those who we elected accountable.
Alexis Terrazas is editor-in-chief of El Tecolote. You can find their coverage and all our election coverage at klw.org. We all need to just wind down. And that's what we're going to do next with an episode from New Arrivals, KALW's newest bite-sized podcast.
This is New Arrivals, a socially distanced book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Poet Tess Taylor lives in El Cerrito. She has two new books of poetry out now. This reading is from Rift Zone.
This is called Song with Wild Plum and Thorn. The morning is cold and the world is hard, but even in fog, it is still midsummer. The kids need to play and the grocery budget ticks toward nothing the way the world tips towards doomsday. The walls in my chest will not let me breathe, and all the screens flicker and still answer nothing, so I take the children down to the bike path and with buckets and a few blessed hours wander a corridor of weedy fruit. Blackberry, wild plum, all overhung, wee leaners or gleaners, half acrobatic, lost among boughs, alone till I notice others stopping with buckets or tiffins, in many languages, along these tracks picking what weeds we still hold in common as dry heat builds and fog thins. In common, the thought feels strangely radical. Crumb or bloom beyond loneliness. For a while, I feel entirely animal, little forager, hungry for fruit. Black sparkle, pale pit and thorn, weeds binding some world together. A word appears in my mind. Hold fast, sprout, raw volunteer. For a while, it is hand to mouth and to bucket, breathing, still here, still here.
That was Tess Taylor reading from Rift Zone. New Arrivals is produced by KALW Public Radio.
And New Arrivals is a podcast produced by Lisa Morehouse. Hear more and subscribe at KALW.org/New Arrivals. And before we go, let's listen to some new music from a local artist. This is Naked Roommate from Berkeley. They released their latest record. It's called Do the Duvet. Today's Cross Currents team includes Annalise Finney, Andrew J.M. Garcia, Sonia Narung, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.